I think we have slammed the Black Vault, the website.
We do that a lot.
We're going to be back in a moment. We'll take your calls. John Greenwald with us right here on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back. John Greenwald with us. John, we've slammed the Black Vault, by the way.
Yes, you have. I am watching the traffic. It is pretty incredible. it's still online. That's a kind of a good thing, but it's pretty slow at this point. So might take a little bit to load.
What are some of the different aspects of the Black Vault that you really like?
You know, UFOs will always have a place in my heart as being one of my favorite topics. But you know, in the last 17 years, I've really looked at quite a few government secrets spanning quite a few decades. It's really hard to kind of pick my favorite. I could really kind of only profile what I'm really kind of intrigued by right now. Out of all the government secrets that I have, and hopefully this doesn't get too political, but all the government secrets that I've investigated, I truly believe that the whole Benghazi scandal goes a lot deeper than what the media is really kind of reporting at this point. And I think that some of them are starting to wake up on it. But I did a request to the FBI just to kind of give a very quick story to give an idea of what the government really can cover up. And I did a request to the FBI about all threats to the United States about a terrorist attack, either in or around Benghazi. And the FBI came up with quite a few documents, about 76 pages from what they admitted to, but every single line of it is classified. And the whole point of that story is that I believe that there is a possibility that the United States government could have had knowledge that Benghazi was going to happen. And it could be in those pages that they've at least acknowledged at this point, but yet will not release. And it's something that the Senate is not paying attention to. They're focusing kind of on a different way. So I think that the whole point of that story is that there is so much to discover out there, and to really kind of unravel the mysteries of these government secrets, you kind of look at the topics as a whole. You know, to go beyond Benghazi, it's just so hard to pick one because I think that there's just so many that we could talk about.
It frustrating, John?
What part, that they won't tell you?
Yeah.
You know, it's frustrating. It's fun for me. It's something that I've always enjoyed, but frustrating is definitely a word you could use. I tried to not get frustrated, because what comes after frustration is just the admission of defeat and giving up. And I vowed to myself a long time ago not to do that, because if this was a game to them, which I truly believe it is, meaning the game to the government, if the cover-up is real, whether it be about UFOs or Benghazi or the JFK assassination, whatever it may be, if that really is a game that they are playing, I have to play it by their rules, and they make up the rules, and they're the referee, and they're the ones that always has to go first. But I have to play. I just can't stop. You know, I need to keep pushing forward. I'll never win, but there will be certain discoveries that are made that I think will really start to help paint that picture and again, the picture of what is the truth. And, you know, I think that we really, to get to that point, have to look at everything with kind of a broad scope, because if we focus in on one little thing, you do get that frustrated mindset and just say, forget it. And that's why I kind of ventured out into other topics, because it at least shows me what's possible. You look at what the government has covered up in the past. You look at the lies that they've been caught in, and you look at sometimes how it takes decades for something to be released or to be acknowledged or to come out. And then you start to realize, well, if this is true, then maybe this is, and it starts to lend credence to that. The last 4 or 5 years, and again, I'm not trying to be political, just from my experience, the last 4 or 5 years has brought so many secrets to the table. It's going to keep someone like me busy for quite some time. And that's what's fun for me. But it's also just disconcerting, because you look 40 years ago, you look 50 years ago, you look at the secrets, that have been uncovered, and they took decades to come out. Nowadays, you hear about the CIA mind control experiments, and you go, oh, yeah, well, yeah, okay, I could believe that, but that happened 50 years ago. You know, and then today, it's so hard for somebody to believe in a conspiracy, but 40, 50 years from now, I guarantee people are going to be looking back and talking about these secrets that are kind of unraveling in the last 4 or 5 years. They're going to be talking about them decades from now like it's nothing. And that's what's sad, is the secrecy just will not go away.
John, had Edward Snowden unraveled UFO secrets and gave it not to the Guardian newspaper, but to the Black Vault, you, would you have published that?
Such a mean question.
I know it. Gotcha.
You know, it all depends on, my gut says no. My gut says that I would absolutely pursue it and verify it first, and that has happened to me in the past, where people have come to me and kind of said they work for the government and so on. Not a, on a big scale like someone like Snowden, but I have had people come to me, and one of which was personnel from the National Security Agency, the NSA, ironically, the agency that's under quite a bit of fire right now. And he did not claim any large conspiracy or anything like that. But what he did tell me is he said, you were wording your request wrong. And he told me a couple other ways to ask for UFO documentation. And so, and I do have a point to this story. So I requested these documents from the NSA, and they said, well, I was too broad, which is a kind of a game tactic that they love to play. If you're too broad, they tell you they're too broad, they won't process your request. So I wrote back this gentleman who wrote me, and I said, well, they said I'm too broad. What can I do about that? So he gave me the latitude and longitude coordinates and the date of a major UFO sighting off the coast of Cuba. Now, I didn't know about the case, but I had verified it with Walt Andrus and John Schussler of MUFON many years ago, that they verified it was a legitimate case. So I filed the request to the National Security Agency, gave them the special wording, which was called CAT 2 and CAT 3 comment reports, or communications intelligence, and gave them an incident with the date, the time, and the latitude and longitude coordinates. I mean, how much more specific can you get than that? And it actually came back that everything was classified. So now, back to the root of your question, would I take someone like Snowden seriously? Yes. Would I immediately turn around and post whatever he gave me to the Black Vault? No.
Tempting, and though. Tempting.
It is tempting, but you know what? I get a lot of those types of stories that never pan out. This particular one with the NSA personnel that did write me on the side, it panned out, and that was interesting, but I had to verify it first, because the second I start stepping into that boundary of quote-unquote leaked information, what do we know is real and what do we know is not? And that's that line that, as the Black Vault and what the dream I've had for this site is, I can't cross that line. Because the minute I do, the rest of the information just doesn't seem reputable. It just doesn't seem genuine, and I never want to do that. Of course, now I can give you a documented story that the NSA told me this particular case is classified. That I know. Why? Because the NSA sent me that letter. If nothing ever panned out from that, then I probably wouldn't be telling you that story. So, you know, is it tempting? Absolutely. But I do have to get verification, at least to something, to some degree, to keep grounded, because I don't want to be a site like Assange, where anybody can send in anything, and then I can post it, and maybe it's real, maybe it's not. But who knows? Just read it anyway. I just don't want to be that site.
Okay, let's go to the phones. First-time caller, Dave is in Wisconsin. Hey, David, welcome to the program.
Hi.
Hi, David.
I would like to speak with you in person, because what I have to say, my son and I witnessed something, and I don't trust phones or computers anymore. I'm not a rich person, but I would be more than willing to buy plane tickets to come and see you and tell you exactly what I saw. And it is probably the first time an eyewitness something, and it's, I mean, like earth-shattering. And is there any way we can communicate completely, you know?
Well, you don't trust email. What about regular mail? So John can at least see a little bit of what you're talking about, Dave.
Okay.
Would you do that?
What's the?
All right, John, do you have a mailing address for David?
Unfortunately, I don't. Not one that I would give out at this point, but I'm sure I could work something out to get an address sent. I mean, if you want to email me, there's a contact form on the website. I know you don't want to give your information through email.
Well, I'll tell you what we'll do. We'll get your information, Dave, and we'll get it to John, and John can send you a little note. Would you do that, John?
Absolutely, yeah, and I appreciate that, George. Okay. Thank you.
Tom, take our first-time caller line, get Dave's information, and just pass it on to John. Let's go west of the Rockies. Maury's with us, the state of Washington. Hi, Maury.
Hi.
Good to have you with us.
I think that carcass that they're talking about out in the ocean is a whale that had probably been attacked by killer whales. That happens from time to time, and they don't eat the whole whale up. They just eat parts of it, and then the rest of it floats around and rots.
Well, some think it is a whale, but it does look like, John, it has some kind of a tail to it, doesn't it? I mean,
absolutely,
a huge tail.
Yeah, it sure does. And in fact, just to kind of add to that, because that is a very common theory right now, and obviously the media was touting that explanation as well. On one of the quite a few posts on that case file, and again, I know the site's a little slow. I'm testing it right now. It still is online, but it's getting hit pretty hard. If you go to the case files, the menu that drops down, just hit featured, and you'll be able to see it. Look at the comments at the bottom, and one of the people that has commented gives a fairly lengthy response. They had spent quite a few years at sea. This is not the photographer that I mentioned, because he said that he didn't think this was a whale. But this gentleman actually says firsthand he saw whale carcasses in the sea decaying and decomposing at multiple stages, and he said it looked nothing like this. So take that what you will. It's just another piece of the puzzle. It's a great theory. It might very well be a whale, but there are people out there that have seen decomposing whale carcasses like this person that posted on the Black Vault's file, and they said it looks nothing like it.
John, are you hinting that it's an earthbound creature that died in the ocean?
Well, no, I'm not hinting at anything. What I think is potentially plausible is that this is a creature that either, number one, we think may have been extinct for quite some time. This is an undiscovered creature. I think that's the biggest possibility as it being a whale carcass. I really do. I don't think, and in fact, at this time, I think that might even be a more plausible theory. The reason is because there are more people out there that are posting on the case file and posting on Facebook. My posts reach quite a few thousand people on Facebook, and so I get quite a bit of feedback. I haven't had somebody say, I've seen a whale carcass, and this is what it looked like. I have yet to see that. I've had a lot of people say, I think it's that, but I haven't had anybody that said it. I've had people that said, I have seen a whale carcass, and it looks nothing like this thing. And so that's kind of piling up more and more. And that's what's fun for me to kind of see that on the case file databases. You do have that ability. And everything is free. I don't mean to kind of throw out a cheesy fact there, but I just want to kind of stress that everything on the Black Vault is free. So you don't have to pay money or anything to get in there and post and put your two cents in, because I do believe that this is kind of a collaborative effort. But it's great for me to see that type of information, because I don't know. I don't spend a lot of time at sea. My wife and I, we love to go cruising, and we go on vacations on the water, but I've never seen a dead whale carcass. Not that that would be in a Carnival Cruise Line pamphlet, but, you know, I don't spend a lot of time at sea, so I kind of rely on those that have, and I'm seeing quite a few people that say, I've seen those dead whale carcasses, and they don't look like this, so kind of makes me think maybe that's not what this is.
Let us go to Alyssa in Oregon. Welcome to the program. Hi, Alyssa.
Hi, George. Nice to talk to you again.
You too.
You're doing a stellar job.
Doing the best we can.
You do it well. John, my question is if you've ever come across any documents or information relating to all of those strange earth noises that were heard around the world about a year ago, from like moaning to trumpets and different sounds?
No, that's a great topic, really fascinating to me. What I have filed some requests on, I unfortunately just don't have an update on it, are actually along those lines. They're unexplained underwater noises that were caught on naval acoustic equipment. And I filed quite a few FOIA requests on that, and I'm still awaiting for the Navy to respond. In regards to the earth noises, I can't recall if I've done any specific requests on that, but sometimes it's very hard to figure out where to go with something like that if there's no direct connection to any government agency. So right. Unfortunately, nothing to add there, but in regards to unexplained underwater acoustics that were caught by naval equipment, definitely pursuing that. Hopefully the Navy will get back to me.
Keep an eye out for that. Thank you for your work.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you. Yeah, one quick note to that is that sometimes with the Freedom of Information Act, the process is simple. You create a request and they're supposed to respond to you within 20 business days. Now, they generally will respond to you within 20 business days, but it's generally just a, we received your request, we'll get to it when we can. Document that just came to the Black Vault headquarters, which I had posted online,
just
it actually took 13 years to get. 13. And that's a long time to wait for a document.
I think so, too. Did you know it was coming?
I forgot about it.
You did, didn't you?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. You forget about it. I filed over 4,000 Freedom of Information Act requests since I've started, which is quite a few letters. And, you file them, and I've tried to keep the best organization that I can on it. But sometimes you do forget after a couple years.
A couple years is...
It's not a long time when it comes to the Freedom of Information Act, and it's just another part of the game that they play, and you just have to deal with it and be patient. That's one of the things in life that has taught me more patience than anything else, and that is waiting for the government to respond. And, 13 years was my record. I've had a couple, quite a few actually, that have come over a decade after requesting them, so 10 years. That's a long time.
It is a long time. Do you know Larry Bryant?
Absolutely. Yeah, I've been friends
great.
With Larry for a long time. I love that gentleman.
He knows how to get information, doesn't he?
He sure does, yeah. He's a smart guy. I've learned a lot from him over the years. In fact, I've known him probably since I've started. So I've known him over, 15, 16 years.
Let's go to Brian, Sacramento, California. Hi, Brian. Thank you.
Hey, George. How you doing?
Good.
Long time listener.
Thank you, sir. Go ahead, Brian.
I kind of had a theory on it. Maybe it was like the meta world or multiverse theory. Maybe if we, like the metaverse theory is where we live and there's multiple universes.
Right.
And every time we might see something, that might be a rip in an infinite number of, infinite universes, and the things that we find might be from another reality or a parallel, reality.
Somehow like leaking in.
Pop up.
Well, that's a possibility, John. Who knows anymore that maybe this creature lived in a different dimension and stumbled its way through.
It's quite possible. Yeah, I don't put anything past reality anymore, to be honest with you. This is my personal point of view. I'm kind of a nuts and bolts kind of guy. And, I've just been kind of bleeding documents for the last 17 years. I don't necessarily believe in more of that's the explanation. But who knows? I know science is often proven wrong. And I think that that's definitely a possibility.
John, we're coming back to take some final phone calls with you on Coast to Coast AM. Yes, my friends, next hour we begin open lines here on Coast to Coast AM. But when we come back in a moment with John Greenwald, the Black Vault, we'll take your phone calls on Coast to Coast AM. So, John, when the dust settles and people are able to get to your Black Vault website, what do you recommend? Where should they go? Steer them through this.
Sure. Well, it's a little sluggish, so you might want to bookmark it if it's too sluggish. But there's a couple different areas that I would recommend. The Research Center holds the 700,000 plus pages of declassified documents. When you click on that link, you're going to get quite a few different categories. You and I, George, have pretty much just scratched the surface talking about a select few, but you've got everything there from World War I, World War II era, Vietnam, advanced technology, I call it advanced for its time technology. So there's a lot of cool historical records. I'm a big history buff, so stuff like the old Bell design for the rocket pack and stuff like that. I'm a total geek over stuff like that. So what I do is I research quite a few different topics to bring out, you know, all the information, and I'm sure you'll probably find something that you're looking for that'll pique your interest. So that's the research center. One of the other things I'll point out too that we've talked briefly about is the case files, and that's on the main link at the top right next to the research center. What the case files are is a place where I invite all of your listeners. Again, there's no charge for it. You just sign up for free on the Black Vault, and you can upload your UFO sightings and upload videos. And really, like I mentioned earlier, it's a collaborative effort where others can take a look at it, download, research. Had a lot of people kind of share information on that section, and it's just a free way for people to put on their research as well. I've got quite a few different organizations now taking part. WorldUFOPhotos.org has just signed on. They've been posting a lot of stuff, UFO Casebook, a lot of great organizations out there that have agreed to take part and get their information on there. So a lot of stuff to view and download, but also the ability to upload as well. And then, of course, just places to keep in contact, communicate, message forums with 115,000+ posts to read. So really, if you need a place to get lost in,
this is the vault. That's right.
Probably, yeah. There's quite a bit to download.
Just don't go in the vault and have the door close on you, right?
That's right, and that's happened a lot. I can't tell you how many letters I've received over the years where that door has closed, and they kind of were sifting through the site, and 12 hours later, they didn't realize how much time had passed, and you kind of get hooked, and you'll get bit by the same bug that bit me 17 years ago. The minute you start seeing these government documents, and you don't have to take my word for it, you can verify any of them, all 700+ pages of documents if you wanted to. You can verify them all. But once you start looking at it, you see what information is out there. Again, no matter what topic it is, I urge you to just take 5 minutes and look at what's there. You get bit by a bug that just doesn't go away, and it's a fascinating world to get lost into, and I absolutely love it, and urge anybody that is interested to take a few moments and take a look, because I think you'll definitely agree and get lost in the world with me.
And John, with the case files, how do you categorize them? Are they by date? How do you do that?
You actually have your choice to view them in a couple different ways. You can view them geographically. You want to search for what sightings have happened around you or what case files there are around you. You can search by category, so obviously the UFOs or ghosts or other paranormal, cryptozoology, chemtrails. Some of them are a little bare at this point because it is a new feature, so that's why I send the invitation out there. But it's a section that has really become popular on the Black Vault, so that's one of the things that I'll be focusing on to fine-tune it and make it available to research organizations like MUFON, where it is one of those easy places where you can go on and share the information. And of course, you know, you get the full credit for it. You link back to your website. It's a direct link back to you. So you're not giving up any cherished information. It's just a place to share it and obviously get exposure for the work. So to answer your question, there's quite a few different ways that you can view the case files. Chronologically is one way. But most people I see just kind of view it category by category, and just when they want to look at UFO sightings, they go into the UFO sightings category and just start looking through.
Let's go to Terry now to get things going in Louisville, Kentucky. Hey, Terry, good morning.
Good morning, George and John.
Howdy.
I got something that I can't explain. Happened to me when I was in the Marine Corps.
Okay, sir, what happened?
1979 through 1985. I was 6 years in the Marines. And we were out of 29 Palm Desert Warfare training. And, George, we had blanks in our M16s. And 1 o'clock in the morning, all of a sudden we saw, it was like a white light went across the sky. And we were told that it was a rocket going, weather rocket going up. But George and John, like I said, we had blanks in our M16s.
Why'd you have blanks in your gun, in your rifle?
We were on a
training exercise?
Firing expedition, a lab-like firing expedition. But the thing about it is, George, they took our blanks away from our M16s, and they started passing out live rounds, and we were thought we were under attack, and we can't explain what happened.
Well, I don't know what happened.
What's interesting about a story like that, I'll just chime in real quick, is that, you know, if you have dates, times, locations, and places, and they're communicating with you about whatever this object would have been, or if it was a rocket launch or whatever they tried to explain it away, there may be documentation to find with that, to at least verify some or part of that story. So if you're ever interested in maybe trying to track down what could be available, you know, one of the things I like to do is track down tower logs for Air Force bases when a UFO or major UFO incident happens. That's one way you can kind of verify what's going on, what might be in the air, and so on. I did that with the Phoenix Light story and got a very interesting response back. So you can kind of pursue documentation to at least uncover maybe part of that mystery for you, and maybe it can answer a couple questions for you.
And, John, you know, a lot of people will say, I saw lights in the sky.
Mm-hmm.
What do you, as a researcher, what do you want to look for beyond just, I saw lights in the sky?
You know, one of the lectures I do now, I love giving public speeches, and it's about using common sense and logic. And I think that what do I look for? I look for somebody that uses just that. That you've got to kind of take a step back. It's exciting. It's exhilarating. You hear people's fear. You hear their excitement when you maybe listen to a video and you hear what's going on. But you got to use common sense and logic, because a lot of times it is easily explainable. Quick example is a case that was submitted to the Mutual UFO Network, a great UFO organization, and in turn was submitted to the Black Vault case file database. And it was just this week, just a couple days ago, and it was about a UFO flying, multiple UFOs flying in formation, caught on camera when they were filming a Delta IV rocket launch in Cape Canaveral. And the short of it is, I took one look at this, and it's not the fault of the person who saw it. Please, I'm not trying to talk bad about anybody. But what they saw was the jettisoned engines of the Delta IV. And what I did was took a little time, researched it, and found a high-definition video close-up of that same exact launch. And almost at the same exact point, you see these four rocket engines, the solid rocket engine boosters jettisoned from the Delta IV, and you can see that that's really the quote-unquote UFOs flying in formation. Now, again, there's no one's fault in that, but using a little bit of common sense and logic, you can start to kind of uncover what these mysteries are. And some of them are very, very mundane, that they're very Earth-based explanations, and they're not extraterrestrial. And that's something that I look for, and that's something that I urge everybody to do, is really kind of sit down and think about, okay, what did I see? What really did I see? You know, was there something that was completely unexplainable? And you might, the answer to that might be yes. The answer might have zero explanation, at least Earth-based ones, and those are the interesting cases. But I use that as an example, and I put it up in the case file database just to kind of keep those archived as well, because I guarantee the next Delta IV that goes up, if you don't know that those engines jettison off the Delta IV, you might think that those are multiple UFOs flying in formation near this rocket launch. And so, you know, I'm keeping those archived as well, again, to just have that research reference for those investigators out there that can then just use it as a research point and research tool to try and uncover what the real good cases are. I don't know what the percentage is. That's also another very commonly asked question, which I'll throw out there. What percentage between unidentified ones are there to the identifiable ones? And I'm not sure what the answer is, but I can say that I would say the majority of cases out there could be easily identifiable. But given that, I still think there are a lot that we cannot explain, and I think they really do deserve a critique. And I think they deserve a critique not only by investigators like myself, by curious minds like Coast listeners, but also the scientific community that I think is completely shunning this topic at this point.
Okay, let's go to Marie in Brooklyn, New York. Hello, Marie. Good morning.
Morning. I'm so happy to speak with you again. I've been listening. I think you're aware of the fact that the government has been doing top secret animal experiments on Plum Island off our coast here.
Yes, I would believe they have been.
And all these decades, we've been frightened because we didn't know if it was Dr. Mengele type things they were doing to animals or germ warfare or what. And we thought we were at risk if anything escaped into the water or on the land, you know. And from time to time, strange things washed up on our shores. Well, a few months ago, the government announced they had closed down their operations and they were selling Plum Island. So I don't know, it could be top secret, not a peep. All these decades, we could never find out what was going on. So it could have been someone's way of hint, what's going on, or maybe a not so conscientious person dumping the refuse or whatever, or maybe thinking they're being humane by setting some of these poor creatures free. I know when I was younger, I cried about it a lot. My heart went out to those animals.
Well, now you bring up something very interesting, Marie, and that is, you know, like the island, John, of Dr. Moreau.
Mm-hmm.
How do we know, for example, that this Persian Gulf creature was some kind of creation, a mixture, some test that went awry?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that that's definitely a possibility. There's a case file in there about a humanoid underwater looking creature, which got quite a few hits as well. One of the more popular cases. And somebody said, yeah, the aftermath or the after effects of Chernobyl. And you start to really kind of think about it. And I never thought of that. But you start to think about it and go, yeah, you know, how much of this is our doing? One thing we haven't talked about, but I work as a television producer and work a lot for History Channel and Discovery Channel.
Yes, you do.
Got a show airing in syndication that I was very happy to take part in, both on camera and as one of the...
Is that Unsealed?
That is Unsealed, yeah.
Good job.
And we did, thank you. Yeah, we did a full episode on kind of biological experiments in Plum Island and kind of investigating the secrets of what really is going on over there. And it's a fascinating topic when you look at kind of the secret inner workings of what they don't want you to know about. And there's a lot to be uncovered. And I'm an animal lover like you are. And, you know, it kind of always makes me cringe when I see those secrets and those experiments that come out, not only on Plum Island, but obviously animals are one of the bigger targets when it comes to biological weapons testing. Of course, as we know now, so were humans. And so were humans without their knowledge with biological testing. So the government has done some pretty cruddy things, not only to animals, but humans as well. But yeah, it's a great topic. I personally hate to admit this, did not hear that they were closing down and selling Plum Island. I believe HARP was being shut down.
HARP is shut down for now.
Yeah, that's kind of what I heard, but I didn't hear that about Plum Island. So that's a little bit new to me, so I'll have to kind of check that out and see. I'd be surprised, though, that they would sell that land, just simply because with the type of experiments that have gone on there, you know, God only knows what type of viruses and everything seeped into the ground.
You got that right.
It might be a pretty heavy discount, though. I would guess it might be a little cheap. But other than that, I'm surprised they're selling it.
Let's go to Moses in Clearwater, Florida. Hello, Moses.
Hello, how are you, George?
I'm doing great, thanks.
Good. Hey, there was a caller that was calling a little while ago about the sounds in the air. Operation Blue Beam would be something to look up.
Yeah,
and there's a website that they can go to.
Good point. Have you heard of this, Operation Blue Beam, Project Blue Beam, John?
I have not, no, but I'm writing that down to definitely take a look at it for you.
It's like a false flag. It's, you know, hieroglyphics in the sky of UFOs. So governments, of course, could begin to do what they do with us. If we're panicked, if we see UFOs and we think something's wrong, we're going to turn to government to save us, right?
Uh-huh.
And we're going to give up things and rights and everything else. It's kind of interesting. Now, Moses is right on that. It's called Project Bluebeam.
Interesting. Yeah, I'll have to definitely look into that for you.
You probably have it in your documents somewhere, 10,000. You haven't read every one of them, have you?
You know, I try and look, read them, no. Tried to look through them and see what kind of gems are in there, absolutely. But it was 700,000 pages of stuff.
We'd never see you or hear from you again.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, what's up next? Speaking engagements, where do you go?
Well, I just came back, I guess, 2 weeks ago. I emcee the Mutual UFO Network MUFON conference every year, I have for the last 9 years. That's a great organization. At this point, not off the top of my head, I can't think of any speaking engagements, but I'm always open to those. I love those. And then, of course, Unsealed airs weekly, as far as I know still. I know season one has wrapped. I know there's still some new episodes trickled in. Here in Los Angeles, it's on KTLA Channel 5 at 11 o'clock on Saturday nights, 11 and 11:30. Of course, it's a little bit different everywhere, but you can catch me on pretty much every week on those two shows, Unsealed Alien Files and Unsealed Conspiracy Files.
I had a speech in Columbus a month or so ago, and I'm in my hotel room, and boom, you popped up on the screen with Unsealed.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that. I mean, it was a rough night for you then.
I had nightmares ever since.
Yeah, exactly. Well, it was a great show to be a part of, both on and off camera, and we had a lot of fun with it. So the producers did a good job on putting it together, and I was glad to take part. And then I'll also send an invitation. I know the site's pretty sluggish out there on the blackvault.com side, but one of the things that's really picked up for me is kind of the social networking aspect of all of this. I schedule a lot of posts to go out and kind of keep everybody informed on what's new on the site. So if anybody is kind of looking for to kind of keep in contact with me on Facebook, it's pretty easy. It's just facebook.com/theblackvault.
You got it.
Take you to the Facebook page.
Super. Thanks, John. Good job. You really do. We need more people like you. Up next, open line.